This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on NewJerseyRevolutionRadio.com. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. And today we're going to be talking about all the things that have gone down probably in the past month or so with education in the state of New Jersey. There's been some interesting pieces of legislation that have come out of Murphy and Sweeney, one dealing with park testing, and just recently they put out a modernizing the school funding formula, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense either. So I've got a panel set up for today. We have Melissa Tomlinson, who's a friend of the show. She's been on here a few times before. She's one of the organizers for Badass Teachers. She's a teacher herself. She's an amazing all-around education activist. We also have Jessica Clayton. She serves on the school board. She's also the owner and operator of Riverside Rhymes Nature School. Welcome to the show, guys. I'm so excited to have both of you here.
Thank you, Heather.
So let's jump right in with the park testing first. For people that maybe don't have children or don't even necessarily know what park testing is, even if their children are taking it, let's describe first what park testing is. You want to start with that one, Jessica?
Sure. Park test is a standardized test that we that is mandated by ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act. New Jersey doesn't necessarily need to use the park test itself. We can use any standardized test, but in order to comply with ESSA, we have to assess the students in 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and once in high school. So that's the standardized test that we use.
And how would the park test, is park test different from other standardized tests? Do they have certain merits for one over the other, or just that's the one New Jersey chose to use? What was the reasoning for picking park?
Yeah, so what happened when the changes to the new standardized test came about around 2010, two big consortiums formed. There was park, and then there was SBAC, S-B-A-C. And it was up to each state to make the decision about kind of what consortium they wanted to belong to. And originally, most of the country went with PARC. It was a higher number. Now we're down to, gosh, I think we're down to only maybe about 7 states. Don't quote me on that number, but it has significantly dropped for the number of states that are actually still part of this consortium.
And so there's a lot of concern about park testing. There's a lot of issues with it. People are not happy with park testing. So let's start. I want to get input from both of you, but let's start with Jessica. What are some of the issues that come up with park testing?
Well, what I see as an early childhood educator is that the park tests start too young. 3rd grade is very early to take a standardized test. And what ends up happening is that academic skills that we didn't used to teach in kindergarten that we used to teach in 1st grade are now being taught in kindergarten. And it's getting harder and harder for young children to succeed at school because we are foisting higher and higher academic standards upon them. I'm sorry. In addition to that, I just recently went to a meeting where they asked people, all people from teachers, parents, and administrators about park tests and what they thought were the issues. And I liked one teacher's comment particularly. She said that she was really upset that she had to set up a mindfulness center in her classroom, and she felt that park tests, the stress of taking park tests, was a major contributor to the amount of stress that the kids were under at school.
Yeah, because these are fairly high-pressure tests, right? They're not just, I mean, I think we took standardized tests way back when I was in school, but there was really no pressure attached to them. So that's kind of different nowadays, right, that there's a lot of pressure. And are they actually a graduation requirement?
They tried to make them a graduation requirement. Luckily, I don't think they passed that bill. Did they, Melissa?
It did go into the regulations, and that was part of the problem. It wasn't done legislatively. That's part of what's trying to be rolled back now.
Yeah.
But if you still look at the regulations as written, the new ones have not come out yet. As of 2020, unless these regulations are written, it will be the graduation requirement.
Okay, so what kind of other problems are you seeing, Melissa, from the park testing?
You know, it's funny. We label it as park in New Jersey, but the discussion itself kind of needs to be asking the question, what's wrong with standardized testing to begin with? The history of standardized testing really has a racist origin. Any kind of standardized tests that were brought into school are based upon the SAT. And the SAT is actually created by a gentleman, Bingham, who was one of the leading people of the eugenics movement. These types of standardized tests, they're a tool to sort higher achieving, lower achieving, and separate, which leads to how segregated our school districts are right now. And not only, can you look at that in isolation, if you look at the communities from the effects of redlining, which now is illegal, but we all know it still occurs, people want homes for their families in better school districts. So it's just a self-perpetuating racist cycle. And until we stop these tests as a tool to rank schools, to rank teachers, and to rank students, we're still falling into that cycle of white supremacy.
And now, does this actually also have an effect, since it does go into teacher evaluations, teachers that may be considered the better teachers are being drawn to the more white neighborhoods, whereas, if you're coming into it knowing, okay, well, this school is considered a less well-performing school, so my evaluations are going to be lower?
It does. Especially in New Jersey, when you look at how teachers are evaluated, and they're evaluated in part by something called the student growth percentile, which takes the test scores into consideration and figuring out this percent, and it's put into a formula and the score pops out at the end. So these SGPs are subject to influence by outside factors, because the tests and the results of the tests are subject to influence by outside factors. And that's actually a key component of the NAACP statement that was released within the past couple weeks, declaring standardized tests, declaring their opposition and the racist origins and the perpetuating of the cycle, because of what you just stated, teachers not wanting to have poor evaluations, they will stay away from communities of color and lower socioeconomic communities. And on top of that, the whole scoring for the tests, the growth percentile, has a direct correlation to the student's prior achievement. So if a student achieved higher previously, their growth percentage has a direct correlation to being higher. So no matter what you do, depending upon where a student is at, you're not going to be able to significantly increase that growth to improve any kind of evaluations or rating or whatnot.
So it's really setting up a cycle that's almost impossible to break out of under the standardized testing, right?
I would even say is impossible.
I wanted to add that when I went to that panel, to that discussion, one of the major issues was special education teachers took issue with the test, because what happens is if you're performing below grade level as a student, you can't take a test at that lower grade level. You have to take it at the level of the grade that you are set in. So if you're a third grader and you're performing at second grade level, you're taking a third grade test, and you're really setting up those students to fail. And there are better tests. There are tests where you can take the first question, and then the first question's results will allow the test to change in order to set up at their learning level. And then all the tests will evaluate them at their actual learning level, not the level that they're supposed to be at. So the special education teachers especially said that they needed that kind of a test, because their kids go take that test and they just click the buttons because they don't know the answers and they can't possibly get the right answers, and they feel hopeless.
Right. I've heard of adaptive testing being used in lots of applications before, but it kind of seems like it would be better if there was no testing at all, correct?
Oh, yes. I completely agree there.
Yeah, because when you start to look at adaptive testing, and they're all technology-based. So mm-hmm. here you have students, and especially special education students, and disclaimer, I'm a special education math teacher. So to have a student looking at a screen, having to do scratch work on paper, transcribe numbers, write everything down correctly, do the work, and then transfer that answer back into the computer screen, there's a lot more room for error.
Right. So what did actually come out recently about the transitioning away from this sort of testing? What steps are being made versus, you know, what's that really look like? Are they going to go away, or is it going to be useless concessions that aren't really moving towards getting it away?
In my opinion, it's going to be useless concessions. Like I said, I'm a firm believer that unless you get rid of them completely, we're not going to make any kind of significant changes to our school system. But what Murphy did put out was a couple statements for transition, a couple guidelines to help build the next year's regulations, work on reducing the weight in the teacher evaluations, which is better, because when teachers are evaluated on these test scores, they're pressured. They're pressured to teach to the test. And it's so funny because these tests in the Common Core standards were first brought out so we wouldn't have to teach to the test anymore. But no matter what, when you tie evaluations to test scores, that's what's going to happen. It's kind of almost like a self-preservation instinct on behalf of the teachers. He wants to reduce the number of tests at the high school level. So he wants to get rid of the Algebra 2 and some of the English language, the ELA tests. And as I was looking at it, I noted, so that would leave the Algebra 1 test, and that would leave the 10th grade ELA test. So you're testing for high school graduation, possibly in 9th and 10th grade. Doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. The thought behind that is, well, if they don't pass, they can test again. Well, that would require them either taking the class again, and they may have passed the course and not been a good test taker. So if they don't take the class again or don't get tutoring, which some students don't have the financial means to do, the chances that they're going to pass the test the second time are diminished. It's just setting up more room for failure that way. He also wants to reduce the length of the test by 25%. And he wants to have flexibility for first-year English language learner students, which is already something that's in our system. So I don't believe just keeping it at 1 year is doing those students any justice. It takes more than 1 year to become proficient in a language.
So why do we still have these tests, basically? Is there a capitalist, like, that's profit-based? What are the people that support these tests? Why do they exist? Either one of you can take that one.
One of the things is that it's a federal law that we have to comply with ESSA. And that's true, but there's also another way that we can comply with ESSA. We could pilot a new standard, a new testing system. It doesn't have to be a standardized test. Other states, only a couple, but other states have done a pilot. And we could do a pilot. And when I went, I advocated for that pilot. I asked actually for a portfolio-based assessment, something that would use the work that the children already completed in class all year long to assess them, you know, in compliance with the federal mandate. And I thought that would be a much better way. However, that was not even close to what they ended up doing.
Yeah, I am going to second that. I had recommended the portfolio type assessments that New York State Performance Consortium has been using. And I know several of us who went to those meetings, we had all discussed. And it's been known for a couple of years that this is the direction that we would like to see New Jersey going. You know, it's funny, you asked about profit that are made and what started this in first place. And when Jessica was talking about ESSA, I was reminded that the role that Bill Gates had in financing the advocacy for ESSA, for the new regulations, and the role he has still in education. He spent like $44 million within the past 2 years towards pushing standardized tests and the PARC and the SBEC corporations. He has cost taxpayers at the local, state, and federal levels over $350 million with his teacher evaluation systems, mostly in like Tennessee, New York, other states. But New Jersey has a form of that. It's just not directly costed or, you know, financed by him. He's also, you know, just been involved in all parts of education. He was one of the original pushers of the Common Core, and every single project that he has taken on has been a distinct and a costly failure.
So there's really, what we're doing is just ridiculous, and there's no reason it should be how we're evaluating kids these days. It really seems like this should be an easy fix. Why is it not being fixed? I mean, do we have any idea why legislators haven't just said, okay, we just need to do something different?
I would say that part of it is because of the profits from the corporations and Bill Gates, apparently. But also, I think it also has to do with the federal mandate. I mean, the federal decisions that we, you know, Jersey doesn't want to stick its neck out to pilot a new system, come up with a new plan. They just want to go with the standard of what the federal, you know, government is mandating. I don't know why they don't make a change.
So I can talk a little bit about that. You know, they're influenced by money, obviously. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the history of the cycle of corporate profit, the before this war on education, it was the war on drugs, right? And companies profited immensely from the war on drugs, and that kind of phased out and dried up, and we got into this state where we're in, and corporations couldn't profit so much anymore. The last big pot of money, healthcare had already been done. Every other system in the country had already been attacked by corporations. Education was the last golden pot of money that was accessible, and corporations had not gotten to yet. And it became a direct agenda to paint the teacher as somebody who really doesn't know what they're doing in the classroom. And, anybody can teach. If you worked on a car, you can teach somebody how to work on a car. And we know that that's not true. We know educators have, you know, at a minimum 4-year degrees. Most of the educators I know are close to master's or on their way to doctorates. It was really devalued as a profession. And that's part of why this is still going on today, is because of that direct campaign.
So what can people do if they want to help get PARC testing eliminated, or any sort of standardized testing eliminated once and for all? Can we write legislators? Are there people we should be contacting? Either one of you can take that question.
Yes, absolutely. Write your legislators. You can also opt out. You can also just say to your children, you know, or the administrators, that you don't want to have your kids take the tests, and, you know, they'll have to deal with that.
Yeah, that's the biggest source of power that we have, right? Civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the one way of showing civil disobedience that's safe, right, for most parents. And I don't necessarily mean just in communities of color, but I also mean in suburban white communities as well. You know, and you'll be told you will get pushback from districts. There's no such thing as opting out, New Jersey. You're not allowed to do this, but your child may not graduate. Federally, there is. You have a right to decide your child's education. You have a right to refuse the tests for your child. And as far as graduation, the only way we're going to make the change is to put the pressure on in the first place, which we did. And unfortunately, I think after the first 2 years of test refusals, parents got really scared. The Department of Education really pushed back hard and threatened no graduation. So some parents backed off of that. But as we see, they are making changes, and they'll continue to make changes in the direction we want them to if we keep that pressure on.
Yeah, that's great. I didn't even know that that was a thing because I don't have children myself, but that's great information for parents to have that they have some power in this. I know a lot of times people feel powerless, but that's a big piece of power that parents have. So it's great that you're getting out the message that they have that. And I did want to talk to you guys real quick before we head out. Also this week, there was the changes to the school funding that they wanted to modernize the school funding, I believe were Sweeney's words. And so what is this going to do? How are they changing it? And from what I understand, the changes do not seem to make a lot of sense. So if anyone can help clear up a little bit about what they are changing and if these changes are beneficial or negative.
Jess, you want to start with this one?
Sure. So this, they're changing the way that we, the state distributes the funding for in different town and districts. In my district in Brick, and I have to say this disclaimer, though I am on the Board of Education, I'm not representing the Board of Education right now. I am just me, Jessica Clayton, talking. In my district in Brick, we are going to lose $22 million over the next 7 years, and we can only raise the taxes 2% every year. So we are in no way going to be able to bridge the gap from what we are currently have in our school funding to we never need $22 million out of our taxpayers. And honestly, we really shouldn't because we are not a high income community. We are a middle and lower income community, and our taxpayers could be forced into foreclosure if our taxes were increased that much. Now they're saying for the funding formula that we are not taxing our taxpayers enough, that our taxpayers, our homeowners can afford to pay more money through their taxes for the schools, and that the state shouldn't have to pay so much in our district. But $22 million is a huge burden to place on taxpayers for over 7 years. This just year alone, we're losing $1.9 million. You know, we already did our budget. That means that we have to take off an additional $1.9 million worth of those things on our budget that we already couldn't have nearly as many things that we should have in our budget. And we, as our town, we are not actually paying even close to the amount. We're not spending enough on each individual child to meet the state's requirements for how much money we're supposed to spend per child. We can't even come close to meeting that regulation because now they're cutting our funding.
So let me just, okay, if I heard this correctly, and maybe I heard wrong, but you can only raise taxes 2%. They're cutting some huge percentage of your budget that even if you raise taxes, which you don't want to do, you could never get that money back. There's no possible way to recuperate that. It's set up just that you're going to lose money.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is correct. Exactly. And even if we are actually mandated now to raise taxes 2%. So we couldn't even choose not to if we wanted to. But there's no way we could recoup those fundings, even if we raise our taxes 2% for 12 years.
Wow, that's pretty insane. Did you want to chime in, Melissa?
So they're talking about modernizing the funding formula, right? They want to make changes to the funding formula itself. It's based on, not only is it based on taxes, but it's also based on student enrollment. So if your enrollment drops in a district such as mine, you get less money. Our district is at such a minimum as far as staff and we have higher class sizes. We've gotten waivers from the states. We have a middle school that right now for the second year is not going to have a vice principal. We've cut basically everywhere that we can cut in our district. So my concern when they talk about modernizing the funding formula, they're not agreeing to modernize the revenue sources that the state is looking at. And that's my biggest concern. We're still not, so we got part of a millionaire's tax, right? We didn't get what the state needs. We still don't know what's going on with legalization of marijuana and the possibilities that our schools could get from such a course of action. We're not talking about responsibility of corporations and organizations within areas themselves to help with some of the tax burden, or like in my district that has no tax base, making allowances for that fact, because we are so closely connected with the economy of Atlantic City. We've suffered since the last round of casino closings and have had people move out and businesses shut down. So until we're addressing all those different areas, healthcare, teacher pay, and how much the districts are strapped now to pay for healthcare, and how reliant they are upon the teachers' percentage that the teachers pay for healthcare. Districts now rely on part of that to make up some of the money of the school budget. Until we address those other issues, simply saying you're going to modernize the school funding formula isn't going to be any kind of a solution at all.
And they never actually used the old funding formula, right? They never actually fully funded it in the ways that the old formula, they never even used that one. So what does that say about the new one? That
yeah, you know, when I talk to other states, they look to New Jersey as a model where we have one of the most progressive funding formulas. But because that formula was enacted, I think, like 1 year before Christie got into office, and then Christie got into office and immediately stopped funding schools and did either flat funding. Well, his first year, he did millions of cuts and then flat funding after that. We were never brought back up, and I don't foresee us ever being brought back up to the levels that we're at. So then to add this other round of cuts to some of the districts that we're experiencing right now is just putting us further in the hole.
Yeah, it seems like the cycle that's impossible to break out of. They just keep cutting and cutting, and it seems like a deliberate attack on education.
Yes.
It can't feel like anything other than they're deliberately trying to cut public education.
Yeah,
at least from my perspective, from your host perspective, it seems intentional.
I think one of the mistakes they made was they based the formula on the current property value in the areas, but they didn't ask districts to reassess their property values. So some districts have reassessed recently, and other districts haven't reassessed since the 70s. So you can't make a modern funding formula based on districts that have different, you know, they don't start at the equal ground.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, you know, I think my house has been reassessed in about 7 years.
Right. Specifically, cities like Jersey City might have, you know, tons of housing that hasn't been reassessed since the 70s, but their district might be valued a lot higher now because of the changes to that community specifically.
So can anything people do about this, or is this in the law now, this new funding formula? Is that passed officially?
It has passed. I guess the only thing we can do is to ask our legislators to change the law.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
No, go ahead.
No, I would also say to get concerned and get involved with the other issues that affect education, like I was saying, that the healthcare in this state, it's very expensive, and that is a lot of what is inhibiting the programs like public education to get the funding that they need.
Right. If that money was not part of that pot of money, then that whole pot of money could go towards education. Mm-hmm.
So if you fought for single payer, then all teachers' insurance would be covered by single payer, and then some of the funding that we get for insurance could be put to the students specifically.
Right, and you look at it from the other end, from the community members. If community members don't have the healthcare costs to worry about as well, they'll have more money to pay for their taxes. Property values can be assessed and properly taxed, and that pot of money would go up as well.
Yes, that makes sense.
That's why I always say when I close out my show that the future is yours to create. Like, we can create a so much better system if we all fight for it. Either one of you have any closing words? Do you want the last word about anything before we shut out today?
No, thank you, Heather.
No. Thank you guys so much for being here. It's been really educational. You want an education, you bring in the teacher.
Thanks.
And thank you to my listeners for listening today. If you like hearing these kinds of things that you are not hearing on the mainstream media, or you like these activist interviews or our activism that we're doing around issues, help us out on New Jersey Revolution Radio. We are not taking any corporate money. We are relying on small donations from you guys, and help us keep doing it. Going places, buy a tank of gas to get somewhere so we can cover things in your neighborhood. Help us get, you know, Brian just got his $10 whiteboard. Maybe I need a $10 whiteboard. But whatever you can do, even the smallest donation can really help us out. If you give us 10 bucks a month, we'll personally thank you on the show. And we really appreciate you guys so much. Thank you. Like us and follow us on all the different media places that you can get podcasts. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.